Today on Older and Wiser.
What celebrity would you like to have over for dinner? A survey reveals the top choices for those of us over 50.
Think you're a good cook? Well, today we'll reveal what most people think makes you a pro in the kitchen.
Ooh. Also, we'll reveal what millennials think is the age to finally get your own apartment and the worst day to get a good night's sleep.
I'm Bob Bates along with Susan Sakara, and you're listening to Older and Wiser. All right, well, today we're talking about two of Susan's least favorite things to do, cooking and throwing a dinner party. So this may not go well. I'm just warning you.
I don't mind the party part. It's the cooking.
Well, our first survey is from London's Sunday Post. It says here, survey reveals older generation's perfect dinner party guest list. Well, I just tell you what the Brits said in this survey. They were thinking maybe Barack Obama, J.K.
Sure.
Rowling. Maybe Donald Trump and a guy named Boris Johnson, who is the, I think he's like the British version of Donald Trump. He's even got the blonde hair. Do you want people to argue or do you want people to get along?
Well, see, I guess you want a stimulating conversation, so you don't want everybody just agreeing on everything. On the other hand, you don't want people throwing, you know, dinner rolls. So,
it's exciting.
Yeah,
it could add to the drama, but I don't know.
If I were cooking, they might do that just because of the meal. But I think you want to have people who are interesting, who have something to them, maybe even besides, a dimension besides what they do for a living or for the reason you know they're famous. Someone like, Prince Harry, I think, had come up at one point. And you know, he's famous because he is who he is, and he was, you know, born to – he's royal.
And yet you've got
a lot of interesting things.
Right, and you have questions for him, right?
And the charities he works for are interesting. There's a lot of people that I think would be interesting.
Who's number one on your list?
Oh, God. There's two people that I interviewed, and I thought I loved the fact that I had met them, and they were not disappointing at all when I met them, and they were idols, was Phil Donahue.
Yes.
And Alan Alda. That's just my gut reaction. So those two gentlemen and Phil Donahue also, I always thought was just wonderful.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, well, they have something to them. You know, they're interested in stuff. And
would you invite Marlo along as well, or do you think
sure. she could be a third? I think she'd be interested because I'd love to hear more about the St. Jude Hospital.
Oh, okay.
Frankly, and I loved Danny Thomas years ago.
Funny that you should mention Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas because my wife and I were once invited to a party thrown by their head of household. They called him a major domo in those days.
Yes, yes. Okay.
And I don't know why my wife knew this guy, but he liked to throw these dinner parties in New York. And we were in New York, and he said, I'm throwing a very posh party with a celebrity guest. So we went. We were like the low-rent people on the list, by the way. And it's a beautiful apartment, all white, high ceilings, amazing thing. The guest of honor was none other than Eartha Kitt.
Oh, my gosh.
And by the time we got there, she was pretty deep into her third or fourth cocktail. So she was flirty, let's put it that way. And we sat down at the table. There were eight of us. And I was seated right next to Eartha Kitt. And she was waving around with her arms talking and stuff. And I was very concerned about the shrimp she was holding in her left hand because she was gesturing with it. So the shrimp was flung out of the tail and ended up in my lap.
Oh.
And for a moment, she was trying to decide whether to go for it. Some of the other celebrities that the Brits would have invited to their fantasy dinner party, Adele, Meryl Streep.
Oh, yeah, I'd have her over, too. My party's getting bigger now.
What about the Queen? Because people were a little less interested in having the Queen.
Well,
she's fussy.
I'm afraid she'd come to the table and have her handbag with her on her arm, you know? I
think I'd invite James Taylor. Ask him to bring his guitar.
Okay.
Would that be rude to ask James to bring his guitar?
Well, actually, I think, you know what, if he brings it, then you can ask him to play. But I don't think you can say, by the way, can you bring, because now it sounds like not only are you going to have dinner, but you're going to sing for your dinner.
Yeah, exactly. I'd bring Diane Keaton over as well. I love her.
Diane Keaton.
She'd liven things up, right?
That's my fourth at the table. Adele's going to have to shove over a little bit. Okay.
And then I'd either have to have Gayle King or Mel Brooks, and I'm not sure which.
Gayle King would be great.
Yeah, wouldn't she?
Yeah, but I think right now she's so popular, probably with the morning show on CBS, it'd be hard to get her to free up her schedule.
You know, she'd probably have to bring along that best friend of hers.
Yeah. Oh,
that hanger on.
To have Oprah. Of course, Oprah would be fabulous. The only thing is, if you had Oprah over, you don't need the other three. You just have Oprah because she knows everybody. She knows everything. And, you know, why not, right?
I know. All right. Let's move on to our next survey, which reveals the 50 signs that you're a truly good cook.
Are you angry at me?
Two of the things you hate the most. Here we go. Cooking. I know you hate this. This survey was done by Circular, you know, the people who make the kitchenware, which you probably don't have any of in your kitchen.
Circulon.
Oh, Circulon.
See, even I got that right.
Oh,
only because
Circulon, not Circulaire. Okay, Circulon. Yeah. See, I have no Circulon in my kitchen either. They interviewed 2,000 people and asked them what they thought were the things that make someone a good cook. Someone who can rustle up anything from scratch.
Not me.
Someone who can chop things finely. Someone who has eggs and milk in the refrigerator. I mean, what do you think makes of this list here?
But the biggest challenge for me always was, besides the fact that it takes forever, is that it's like multitasking. You've got to have a couple of things ready at the same time. Everything I can do well, like lasagna, one dish.
Yeah. Oh, it's all
pasta,
in one dish. Yeah.
Basically, one dish.
Yeah.
Salad, one dish, and I could do it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't that make you an efficient cook, though, to be able to put it all into one pan?
I have no idea because I don't cook.
One of the other things on this list that people seem to think makes you a good chef is if you can flip a pancake perfectly. Have you ever made a pancake?
No.
Oh, my God.
I haven't made. And also they said making a roast was a test, right?
Can you cook a steak? Have you ever made a steak?
I don't eat steak.
Oh,
I'm not
God.
A big red meat eater.
Do you understand all the symbols on your oven, on the dials?
No.
Have you looked at your oven? Do you keep things in your oven other than food and pots
yes,
and pans?
Yes, I do. I have pots and pans that I use in there.
You know, I once knew a friend. I had a friend who was a producer, and she kept her old videotapes in her stove because she really, literally never cooked. She needed the storage space. Okay.
Listen, they say have a well-stocked pantry with ingredients like masala leaves. I don't even know what that is. Curry powder, I used to have that. Mustard seeds, I used to have that. They have different type of olive oils. I just have olive. I have olive oil. I don't have avocado oil. I have fresh avocados. I like those. Sesame seed, peanut, truffle, canola. I don't know.
I think the key thing for me when I see somebody and I can tell immediately that they're a great chef is that they can chop fast. And if you can go do that, when you chop an onion and it goes, it makes that noise really fast. I can't do that. I have to go slice.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And I can't do that because, and even if I could, I'll never find out because I'm all about prevention. And I really don't want to spend the evening in the emergency room.
Well, then the sound is, ah!
Yeah.
Yeah. According to this survey, researchers found that just 5% of respondents class themselves as an excellent cook. So you're in a good group. Most people really don't think they're a very good cook.
No, except the others that probably are there are, you know, do cook. I don't.
Yeah.
Here's one that they said on the list. Enjoying a messy kitchen.
Oh, you enjoy that?
No, I hate it.
Oh, you hate it, yeah.
I hate it. Let's just put everything away. Don't get that out. We'll just have to clean it and put it away.
Oh, you can never cook if you don't make a mess. You've got to make a little bit of a mess in order to cook.
Can't be afraid. Now I got to clean it up. So, you know, now we're cooking and cleaning. See, this has turned into a double chore.
Can't be afraid to make a mess and get some things out of the refrigerator. If you got to have certain things in your refrigerator at all times. Certainly milk, eggs. You need flour in the cabinet. You need sugar and, gosh, I don't know. You just need your basics, and some people don't even have that. So
I've got eggs.
I always keep eggs.
Eggs are good. Eggs are fabulous.
Get home late at night. You need something to eat. Cook up an egg.
Make an egg. Yeah, I can make a mean scrambled egg. Scrambled eggs I do well, but I'm still working on the poached.
All right, let's move on to our next survey. This one's from Ameritrade. I guess that's the stock stock brokerage company. This survey reveals what age millennials think it's embarrassing to live at home. You know, this is when I graduated from college. I guess I was 21, and I immediately felt it would be embarrassing to live at home. I did not want to come back from college and have to live with my parents. I felt very independent off at college, and the last thing I wanted to do was move back in with my parents. But these days, it's very hard for a kid out of college to be able to afford to.
They can't do the money. It is impossible. So you have to. I think you have to start with the assumption that most are not going to have a fabulous job waiting for them. And even then, if they do, do they have a fabulous job with a great paycheck that most of that has to go to or start to go to the college loan?
Exactly. I mean, rents are through the roof.
Awful.
And salaries for kids out of college are down. I mean,
yes,
you graduate from college, you could very likely make about the same in your marketing job as somebody else would make flipping burgers who didn't go to college. It's just difficult. So
yeah.
I kind of understand why the age has gone up a little. But according to this new study, millennials think they should move out by the age of 28. That's late, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, it's late considering our standards when we were younger. I don't think it's late now.
The teens who were interviewed for this survey believe that the best age to move out is by 26.
Yeah, that's ideal.
It's ideal, but I think that's just optimistic. You know,
I think it is. Well, yes, because
when you're a teenager,
it's the cost of living,
and you don't know how much it's going to cost. You haven't really looked at the numbers yet, so you think I'm going to be out by 20.
And it depends where you want to go. If there's a kid in the Midwest who aces through college, and she gets offered a fabulous job in New York City. And then starts to, and says, well, I'll just rent a place there, even if it's small. Even a studio there is going to be through the roof.
All right, let's move on to our next survey from Calm.com. This was published in Reader's Digest, and the headline is, "This is the worst night of the week for sleeping."
The obvious night would be Sunday, because the week is starting. And that's, because of work, because of school, anything like that.
And why? I mean, you've had a nice restful weekend. You've been away from the office for a
because
little while.
Because it's all starting again.
Yeah.
It's psychological.
You start worrying about things that you're going to have to answer for.
Here we go again. How long is it going to take me to get another, you know, chunk of time to just do what I want or relax or catch up?
It's also possible, according to this survey, that and the way they've been analyzed it, that on the weekend, you're kind of thrown off your normal routine. And so by the time you get to bed on Sunday night, you're just not tired. You're not beat like you are the rest of the week.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, even kids in school will stay up later on a Friday night and maybe Saturday. And then Sunday, it's back to, you know, got to get to bed at the right time. Okay. If you keep a regular schedule, they tell you that at just about any age, you're better off in terms of your sleeping.
Mm-hmm. A full 23% said Sunday night. Monday night came in second with 8% reporting that that's the worst night of the week.
You slog through one day and you still have a whole bunch to do.
I guess you are. By the time you get to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I guess we just kind of have a routine.
You're in the routine, yeah. And then it's Friday. Thank God it's Friday.
Do you have trouble sleeping?
Here and there.
Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Sometimes I hate to tell you, I talk out loud to myself.
You lay in the bed
and talk to the radio.
Yeah.
I'll listen to the radio. Usually talk radio.
Doesn't that rile you up though?
No. I listen to public radio.
Oh, so you're like NPR, a cooking segment or something.
I don't want to hear people rant and rave. I can hear that 24/7 now anywhere. seriously.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
But sometimes I'll listen to that. And a lot of times if I have something to do that's on my mind, I'll get up and do that thing. Now, I wouldn't get up and vacuum. That I could care less. You know, I mean, that's not something. But if I have, let's say, a note to write to somebody, and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do, well, you know what? If you're wide awake, get up and do it.
I think the
worst thing is to lie there.
Get up out of bed. Go in the other room for a few minutes.
Read a book.
Yeah.
The only thing is, if it's a really good book, then that'll keep you up because now you're into the book and you're, you know, turning pages. So
absolutely. Well, good luck to everybody on Sunday night as they try to fall asleep.
Yes, indeed.
All right, our final survey this week Who sent us this one? I don't even know. But here's the headline. I like it. How optimistic are you? It probably depends on your age. We actually get more optimistic about life as we get older. And I would have thought it'd be the other way around.
Well, kind of. You think, you probably think that because, you know, as we get older, we're thinking, we're close to the end.
Things are going wrong.
On the other hand, I think you become very practical and say, you know what? I've been through a lot. There's probably more ahead. And so far, it hasn't broken me. And eventually, you know, it's over. I mean, that's it. But there's a lot of stuff, challenging things in everyday life that you realize you've gotten through. There are options.
Maybe that's
there's
it.
Help. There's ways to, you know, there's ways to cope. And I think you've probably had to access some of those by the time you get into your 60s, 70s, you know.
According to this survey, people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, their top worry is, no surprise, financial.
Well, I think that's true for 60s, 70s, and 80s people, too, right now.
According to this survey, people in their 60s and 70s, financial issues are not the number one worry. The number one worry for people in their 60s and 70s and 80s and beyond is losing their memory. Are you worried about that?
Once in a while. Mm-hmm. Not.
Have you experienced any moments of memory loss?
Well, yeah. Did I put my keys, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
where did I put my keys?
What
did I come in here for? I mean, but that's normal. If you read enough about this stuff and keep up with it, you realize that there's certain memory loss that's just, you know, it's typical. The other thing I always say, too, I think you remember the things that are most important to you.
I am worried about that, as I can imagine losing your ability to remember things and to know people and to carry on a conversation. Mm-hmm. That is, once you've lost that, there's kind of what else is there to live for in some
right.
ways, you know? I mean,
yeah, no, I agree.
One other little question they ask in this survey, I think is kind of funny. At what age does old age kick in? 40%. Yeah. Well, it moves around depending on how old you
yes,
are.
Yes, it does. And it actually, technically, I think it does change, but go ahead.
About 40% of the people in their 30s saw 65 as the point at which old age kicks in. When you're 30, 65 looks a long ways away.
Yeah.
But older individuals, of course, felt differently. 20% of people in their 70s felt they had entered old age upon turning 65. So
if
what's your age?
You,
when are you going to say, I'm officially in old age?
I think old age starts at least, you have to be at least in the 80s, because that's when I think things get really difficult.
I'm with you. I'm going to wait till 80 before I admit that I'm old. There
yeah,
you go.
But you know, but until then, I think the message here, though, is that for boomers especially, make the most of what you can while you are even in your 60s.
Well, that's a great way to end another episode of Older and Wiser as we wrap things up here. Susan Sikora, thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure.
And for all the stuff that matters when you're 50 plus, be sure and visit us every day at olderandwiser.com.